Blog Talk Radio.
Is going to be on the school improvement model that shows promise in the first I-3 evaluation. To call in to speak with me at any time during the show, you can call 347-633-9225. To contact New Heights directly, please call 409-786-0247 or email us at newheightseducation@yahoo.com and visit our website at newheightseducation.org. Before we begin, as always, we do have some announcements. We are happy to announce our third radio program, which will be on Sundays. Our newest host, Kathy Woodring, will guide Sunday's audience in American history from the beginning of our history to current events. Her first show will air tomorrow, has aired February 9th, so please do check that out on our page. You can listen to it. It's recorded there on Blog Talk Radio, and will continue to be every Sunday from 11 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Pamela Clark will co-host. Each of our radio programs and their hosts have a new logo. If you're online listening to the show, you can view the designs. Marina Kilma, our graphic designer, created these for us. We also have a logo with all of our images on it. And thank you, Marina, so much. You did a great job. New Heights is offering its bi-weekly enrichment day/co-op classes. The next class will be on February 14th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. These classes will be held in Defiance at the Zion Lutheran Church. Please note that the classes are not religion-based unless families want there to be one. Parents and students are required to participate in these classes and to help with the planning of them. Enrichment Day classes are in the planning process, and so far we will be offering a reading time, science class, and Irish dancing classes, and karate class as well. But we are open to more suggestions. Students are invited to not only attend, but to participate in instructing some of these classes. If you're interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us directly. Again, at our number 409-786-0247 or email us at newheightseducation@yahoo.com. Speaking to the Leadership Council, the New Heights Educational Group is proud to announce a new National Student Leadership Council. For many years, we have played a pivotal role in offering the Student Advisory Group for ages 7 and up, and we'll be continuing to offer this program. This will now be offered to students up to the 8th grade. All 9th grade to college-age students, 14 to 23, will be transferred to the Student Leadership Council. This is open to the public, and any student from any state is eligible to participate. All students entering the Leadership Council must have at least a 3.0 GPA. The council aims to help students build academics, talents, leadership, and community service, along with other skills. Excuse me, it's that time of year again where flu season is about. It seems that I've come down with another cough, but hopefully won't hear too much of that today. Post-secondary education option is now offered to homeschoolers. The Ohio Department of Education released the application information for homeschoolers to participate in the PSEO program. The Ohio legislature changed the law last year to allow homeschool students to receive funding from Ohio's post-secondary enrollment options, the PSEO program. The PSEO program pays for dual enrollment college courses at participating Ohio institutions of higher learning. Homeschooling families who wish to participate in the PSEO program must notify the Department of Education by April 1st of the year prior in which they plan to participate. To find out more about how to apply for this program funding, visit the Ohio Department of Education website. And if you have more questions, please contact us directly. And this site is posted in our description for the radio show. Excuse me again. So now we're going to move on to the topic of the day, which is school improvement model shows promise in first I-3 evaluation. But before we begin, obviously, we need to discuss what is the I-3 evaluation. And the link to this is also on our Blog Talk Radio show description. In the Investing in Innovation I-3 Fund provides grants to entities with a record of improving student achievement, local educational agencies, or LEAs, and nonprofits in partnership with LEAs or a consortium of schools in order to expand the implementation of and investment in evidence-based practices, strategies, and programs to significantly improve student achievement or student growth, as well as to help close achievement gaps, decrease dropout rates, and increase high school graduation rates, as well as college enrollment and completion rates. The I-3 program supports three types of grants that are differentiated by level of prior evidence for practices, strategies, or programs, the scope of the proposed scale up, and the level of funding to be provided. Scale up and validation grants require prior evidence of effectiveness, while development grants support innovative strategies. Grantees receiving funds under this program are required to conduct an independent evaluation of their project and must agree, along with its independent evaluator, to cooperate with the evaluation technical assistance provided by the department and its contractor. The purpose of this technical assistance is to maximize the strength of the impact studies and the quality of their implementation data and performance feedback. The key questions that the contract will address are, to what extent are the I-3 independent local evaluations well-designed and well-implemented, and what are the results for the programs? Cut out for some reason. But as we were talking about before, the findings from a new study by the New York City-based research group, MDRC, the first of three installments in an ongoing $6.7 million evaluation of Successful, again an early literacy program, a popular school improvement model used in 1,000 schools representing 300,000 students nationwide. The program, which includes school-wide curriculum, tutors, bi-monthly student assessments, and teacher training, received $49.3 million from the federal I-3 program in 2009 to expand to more schools and increase training for teachers and staff. A year after, 19 K-5 and K-6 participating schools in four states were randomly selected to launch the program in the 2011-2012 school year. And the RC researchers found that kindergartners who in those schools significantly outperformed demographically similar peers in a control group of 18 schools in the standardized test of phonics, the Woodcock, Johnson word attack test as well. Success for all students got a boost roughly equal to around 12% of the average annual growth for a kindergartner. Moreover, the same benefits were found for poor and minority students. Painting a picture of teacher practice. In the classroom, teachers at Success for All schools differed from those in the control groups schools in a number of ways. They were more likely, for example, to group and regroup students by ability for reading lessons, even across grades. Those benefits are in line with the learning gains found in previous studies of Success for All, which has been studied extensively since its founding in 1987. But the MDRC study goes into more depth in relating the implementation to the outcomes than any study that's come before, said Robert E. Slavin, the chairman of the Success for All Foundation and the director for the Center for Research and Reform in Education at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. It's outstanding and giving a more detailed picture of what's actually happening in the schools, he says. Compared with teachers in schools that did not implement the program, researchers found that teachers in Success for All schools had more and more varied training in reading instruction. They later proved more likely to focus on comprehension, even in kindergarten, than teachers in control schools. They were also more likely to use cooperative learning strategies. Also, following the Success for All design, teachers in those schools were more likely to group and regroup students across multiple grades based on their reading skills and provide more focused instruction. Some of the cooperative learning that students undertake, like turning to your neighbor and telling them something about the text, are common ways comprehension can get reinforced even with very young children, says Janet C. Quint, an MDRC senior research associate and the study director for the evaluation project. One school story. Excuse me. This 700 student Central Elementary School in Allentown, Pennsylvania, is one of the schools testing Success for All as a turnaround model through I3, the school which has repeatedly failed to meet its federal adequate yearly progress goals, met all 25 targets for the first time in 2010-2011, and had more than 1,000 fewer school absences in that year. As part of the program, the school reported adding a literacy coach for 3 days per week, providing about 30% more professional development for teachers. The evaluation report also details the challenge of implementing the whole school program, which requires strictly scripted and paced lessons and regular assessments. Surveys of teachers during the first year of implementation found that many wanted clear guidance on how to structure lessons. For example, I think the SFA is challenging programs for teachers at the outset in many ways, says Ms. Quint. For example, it really is important to keep students engaged forward. But it's for every student to master the lesson the first time, though. Some teachers who felt really uncomfortable in moving forward when some of their students weren't getting it right away. Teachers and administrators also repeated long-held concerns about balancing the many moving parts of the SFAs, which is Success for All, comprehensive school reform model, with many schools reporting they did not have sufficient staff to provide tutors for all students who needed them or put in place the school committees needed to implement the program's whole school reform. Some of the complaints about comprehensive school reform programs arose in previous federal efforts to expand such programs in the late 1990s. The complexity of the program partially explains why Success for All has not been keeping pace with its scale-up targets under I3 evaluation. The group initially proposed expanding its whole school program to 2,100 schools in 5 years, 550 of which would receive startup support via the I3 grant, and Central Elementary was one of these. Now, Mr. Slavin said Success for All will be lucky to recruit half as many new schools for expansion during the duration of the grant, and all, not half of them, will receive startup money. The economy has been so awful, he says. Schools have been struggling just to keep their staff, not to mention taking on any kind of reform program. We expected to have a real rush of schools interested in signing up, particularly with the I3 incentives, but unfortunately that hasn't happened. And so he said that they're going to have to do some real marketing. More studies expected. Still, researchers will continue to study students in the first group of expansion schools as they progress through elementary school. Two additional studies will look more broadly at whole school changes, as well as longitudinal progress for second graders and older students. These will also include comprehension skills, which Ms. Quint said are more difficult to test in early grades. MDRC's report is the first of the evaluations from the initial cohort of four programs that won the largest grants from I3, which are based on prior evidence of effectiveness. The Knowledge is Power Foundation, Ohio's University Reading Recovery Program, and Teach for America all receive scale-up grants for about $45 million to $50 million each, and all are on track to meet the rigorous evaluation standards set forth by the federal What Works Clearinghouse. However, final evaluations for the programs likely will not come until the end of the grants, or even a few years after, based on the average length of large-scale and experimental studies. For example, Steve Mancini, the spokesman of KIPP, said that the initial descriptive report by its evaluator, the Princeton NJ, New Jersey-based Mathematica Policy Research, will be out later this year, but it will not focus on academic progress data as the Success for All report did. Rather, academic results will be evaluated in a final evaluation at the end of the grant period. One of the principles behind I3 was that the grants should be scaled to what we know about what works, says Ms. Quinn. I think that at least the early Success for All program impacts suggest that this approach makes sense, and you want to scale up things that have been shown to work and continue to study them and ensure that they are still effective reforms. Excuse me. So just to sum up what that was about, because I know it was slightly dense about evaluations under I3, but basically it was talking about how I3 evaluations and the I3 program has helped to fund programs that have been proven to work to improve literacy among young children, which is a pro of these. Which is a positive thing that's come about by I3 grants and evaluations. However, there are some cons to this, some consequences, unfortunately. And so we're going to talk about that as well. And if we do run out of time, we will continue this show next week for a part two. So some of the issues with this we're going to discuss now. So the link to this article is also on our site if you would like to read along. By Jason Tomasini, called Private Donor Commitments Falling Short in Some Cases. Excuse me. It was after the U.S. Department of Education awarded $650 million in investing in innovation grants and set off a mad dash for grantees to raise more than $100 million in matching private funds in 5 weeks. Some of the I3 winners are still facing financial uncertainty stemming from initial fundraising struggles. A businessman who pledged $400,000 to an Oregon school district's art program did not make his most recent payment, potentially putting the program's future in jeopardy. Other grantees have also encountered problems with matching funds coming through, and some nonprofit grantees have been forced to contribute their own money to match the initial amount. For its part, the Education Department has lessened the matching fund requirements, but is less clear on possible outcomes for the grantees that have run into financial problems. Those developments have raised questions about the competition structure, including calls by some observers for the awards to be opened up to the for-profit sector. Part of the challenge for I3 is that there is so much cheerleading on the front end and that there was a lack of attention to how you execute and implement, says Frederick M. Hess, the Director of Education Policy Studies or Washington-based American Enterprise Institute, and the author of an opinion blog for Education Week. We didn't spend a lot of time thinking about the what ifs, he notes. In August 2010, the Education Department awarded 49 five-year grants to school districts, nonprofit organizations, and universities ranging from $3 million to $50 million each. The grants were intended to help scale up education programs with proven outcomes or develop promising ones. The terms of the competition, which was funded by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, require the winners to raise 20% of their awards in matching funds from the private sector, such as philanthropies or individual donors, and to do so in The requirement set off a scramble, and many grantees didn't secure the 20% that the grant needed until the final days before the deadline. The education department had reached out to the philanthropic community about I3 and an online registry created by a group of major foundations and managed by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation aimed to match grantees and funders. The Gates Foundation provides grant support for Education Week's coverage of the education industry and K-12 innovation. On different tracks, some grantees, such as the Teach for America and the Denver Public School System, use existing funders to cover substantial portions of the required match. Others have been able to raise the matching amount during the application process. Many winners, though, found that their programs didn't fall within the foundation's funding priorities or grant writing schedules. This is not how foundations are prone to work, says Robert Slavin, the executive director of Success for All. They want a specific project for themselves, not to help out with someone else's project. Success for All, which offers whole school turnaround services, tried many options, including the I3 registry, but couldn't raise the full $10 million before the deadline. Because the I3 grant only stipulates the matching funds, that the matching funds must come from a private source, Success for All contributed $6.8 million of its own money for the $10 million match. School districts awarded I3 grants weren't afforded the same opportunity. In Beaverton, Oregon, school district strained to raise $800,000 in matching funds for a $4 million development grant to fund the Arts for Learning, a program that infuses arts education into elementary school literacy curriculum in the 38,500 student district. Partnering with Young Audiences, a national New York City-based arts organization that manages Arts for Learning in schools, it too came up empty on the I3 registry. Peter Gerber says that, "I don't remember a situation like this," who's the director for Arts for Learning and a veteran of the nonprofit sector. Other grants, he said, had longer arcs. About halfway through the fundraising process, John Wallace, a big Wallacek, a businessman from Vancouver, Washington, who ran the Giving Stream, a new and now defunct company that helps nonprofit organizations raise money, stepped forward with interest in donating money toward the grant. He pledged $400,000, half of the matching funds, and more than $280,000 greater than any donation in Beaverton, including those from Intel Foundation and the Mayor Memorial Trust. He would raise the money by selling advertisements on the back of grocery store receipts, he claimed. "I actually anticipate over the 5 years it'll be closer to $5 million, but we put $400,000 down because we know if we all got hit by a bus, we could do that," says Mr. Wallace, who told the Oregonian newspaper in a profile published in December 2010. The deadline was fast approaching and the I3 award was a public grant, Mr. Gerber said. "We took it at face value that if a person would come forward like this, they would not make a commitment they didn't intend to keep." Mr. Wolosek did make his first payment of $25,000, but the grocery store advertising never came to fruition. He told the Oregonian newspaper that future payments would come from his personal funds. He didn't make the next one of $50,000. Mr. Wallacek didn't respond to requests by Education Week for a comment on this. Beaverton is working with Mr. Wallacek on a new payment schedule to fulfill his commitment, said John Bridges, the director's administrator of accountability. "If he cannot make further payments, Beaverton will have to raise more," Mr. Bridges said. Betting donors. Individual I3 grantees must perform their own due diligence on private funders. I don't think it's permissible or appropriate for the education department to be vetting each private donor, said Nadia Gabby, the Associate Assistant Deputy Secretary for the Department's Office of Innovation and Improvement. Grantees are monitored extensively, though monthly phone calls with project managers and annual reports. That includes a budget and the extensive proof of efficacy requirements to make sure that grants stay on target, Ms. Dabby said. "But there's always a possibility that we can use more dire options at our disposal," she also said. There's an option where we end the grant, and that's not in our interest or our intent at the moment. We want them to be successful. The original situation may be worse than that of other I-3 recipients, but interviews with several other grantees suggest that there are lingering effects from the initial matching funds process. And just because we are running out of time, I'm going to leave it there with the consequences of the I-3 evaluations, and we're going to pick it up again, further discussing the issue with matching funds for these particular grants for I-3, for I-3 grants from the organization that it was awarded to. I'm going to discuss more of that next week. Thank you again for joining me. Hopefully, have less difficulties and costs by then. We'll pick up where we left off. Discuss more about I
think you raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me up.